This is an interview with Amy Haddon Marsh at KDNK Radio in Carbondale, Colorado. And it's August 27th, 2020.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And my guest today is Dr. Barb Chambliss. Hi, Barb.
Buddy, how are you, Amy?
I'm well. Barb has written a book. Finally, you've been working on this book for
30 years.
30 years. And, you know, it's called Women Peacemakers, What We Can Learn From Them. And it's just a lovely book. You know, I have to say that I have not yet read the whole thing, but what I've read is just beautiful. But just a little about you. Barb is a psychotherapist and a professional mediator. And organic farmer. I love how in the chapters that I've read that it always starts in the orchard.
You know, in my apple orchard, right.
Yeah. And she lives in Carbondale and in Paonia. And she was the director of the Volunteer Center for Conflict Resolution in Aspen and has taught mediation all over the place. And she's also worked on restorative justice circles. I've known you. We've known each other for how long?
As long as I've been working on this book, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. And I know that your work is excellent and your book is excellent as well. And I'm really, really excited to and honored to be talking to you about this book.
Thank you, Amy.
I'm being interrupted here.
Oh.
Don't know why. Wrong mic. Wrong mic. There we go.
You have to start over?
No, we don't have to start over, I don't think. I think it was just muffled. I'll have to turn it up. But I will let people know. Sorry. What I'm doing is I'm hosting this show, and I'm also on Zoom. So I'm on a different microphone, and I'm watching myself on Zoom, and I'm trying to monitor the radio, so it's really tricky. But in case people didn't hear me, I'm interviewing Barb Chambliss. She lives in Carbondale and in Paonia. She's a psychotherapist and a professional mediator. We've known each other for a long time, and her book, which came out of her doctorate thesis, is called Women Peacemakers, What We Can Learn From Them. And, you know, Barb, I find it interesting, as I mentioned, that several of these chapters, and I have to say a few or several because I haven't read the whole book, start off in the orchard. Talk about why they start off in the orchard. Is this like a spiritual zone for you?
No, it wasn't an intent. I mean, my intention was to find women peacemakers that fit my definition of peace. And so I would say to people, so let me just show you my definition of peace really quickly. So I make, this is equal respect.
So you have both of your hands.
Both of my hands.
Together. Next to each other.
And you could catch water in these hands.
Okay, right, like a cup.
And this is my visual picture of peace. Mm-hmm. If this happens, one hand goes up and one hand goes down, it is not peace because there's a dominant and a subordinate element.
Okay.
So I would say to somebody, do you know anybody that's working to make this happen? And I move the down hand up to make them even again. Mm-hmm. And people gave me nominations for peacemakers all over the place with that little hand motion thing.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
just some of them happened in the orchard.
Well, for instance, my neighbor that in Cheeto's situation, the first chapter, mm-hmm. he knew that I was doing this. He'd been to a talk, I hadn't seen my hands, and he also knew Cheeto, so he knew it was a good fit. Another, then when I went to Standing Rock, I had two blinking mini apples. It was a really productive year. And so all people came to pick apples, but before they could take any apples home, I asked them if they would pick a box for Standing Rock. And when they left, I looked around, I had 35 really heavy boxes of apples. And I didn't even know what was going to happen at Standing Rock. I had no idea I would get the interview that I did.
So, and this was Standing Rock when the water protectors were protecting the, working against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Exactly.
Right.
And just to follow up on that a little bit, Amy, other things, I'd open my mailbox and somebody would say, this sounds like a peacemaker. And they'd send me a clipping out of a airline news book.
Wow.
Or I went to, for Sister Sarah Clark, I think, who you're about to
Ireland, ask, right.
From Ireland. I went to a concert series in Glenwood Springs. Mm-hmm. And five Irish brothers were playing on the stage. And I just went backstage afterwards and I said to them, I'm looking for peacemakers. This is my definition of peace. Do you know any of them? And they said, we don't know anything about this, but our sister, she's Fionnuala. She's a disc jockey in Dublin.
Oh, wow.
And they gave me her phone number and I called her and she had two nominations for me.
Oh, my, including Sister Sarah Clark.
And one was Sister Sarah Clark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Amazing.
You're going to love that chapter.
Well, so far I really like it a lot. She sounds like a phenomenal book, but let's back up just a little bit. This came from your doctorate dissertation. Is that correct?
No, it started before that. I've always really wanted to know how people made peace.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up at the era where a lot of the folks I graduated high school and college with, they got drafted and they ended up in Vietnam.
Right.
And then they came back and I saw the consequences of war. And even after they left boot camp, they knew how war was made. They knew their job in war making. And I kept going,
have I lost you?
I can't talk to them about peacemaking even. Then I did things like became a mediator.
I have lost her. Things have frozen up on her end. And we will come back. As soon
Okay, you're frozen for me. Okay, can you hear me now? Great.
So let's try again.
Okay.
Are you there?
I'm here and I can hear you.
Okay, we can hear you too. So you're talking a little bit about how this book came about.
Prior to my PhD, yeah.
Right.
So always I wanted to know how peace was made.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up with a lot of my friends being drafted and going to Vietnam and telling me what boot camp, how it changed them.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept going like, yeah, but how is peace made? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I then tried being a mediator. I went to work on an Air Force base.
Wow.
Because I wanted to know how you take a citizen and turn them into a soldier, things like that. So, and none of it really got down to some of the real questions like, who does it? How do they find the work? How do they pay for the work? How do they keep going when it gets rough? So I picked those questions for my dissertation.
Oh, I see.
And then I got hooked on interviewing these women.
I bet. Well, you know, in the book, you talk about conscious peacemaking.
Yes.
And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that because you're talking about making peace. And, you know, I've learned that peace is not necessarily a passive, peace is an active verb, right?
Good job.
As compassion is. But, you know, I'm sure there are many people listening who maybe think that peace is sort of a passive thing. But you talk about conscious peacemaking as opposed to peacemaking. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, you need, I mean, people are doing, if my definition of peace is mutual respect between two people.
Okay.
People go in and out of doing that all the time, briefly, often. And especially if they're not challenged in doing that. But they don't think about it. They don't plan it. They don't go out there and look at what's not right. Where is something not just?
Mm-hmm.
Where is somebody who's been willing to put up in a lower level of privilege for years and years, and you go like, wait a minute, that's not right. Mm-hmm. And then you consciously go like, well, I'm going to see what I could do about that. And I think we need, I don't want the quiet peacemaking people to ever quit, but because there's so much conscious fighting and competition and war making going on right now, we need conscious peacemaking. We need people to stand up and call themselves peacemakers. And by the way, almost none of these women called themselves that in the beginning.
Well, what's the difference between a conscious peacemaker and a demonstrator or a protester, even a nonviolent civil disobedience? What's the difference?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, my answer to that question is it takes a village to make peace. And the protesters are really good at a certain element of it. They're loud. They are many. They get the press involved. They are speaking from personal experiences. We really need protesters. The women peacemakers, for instance, go about it another way. They're usually alone. They don't want the press often. They're doing it very quietly. Okay. They are partly it's quiet because they often have to go under the radar of the oppression.
What do you mean by that? Can you give an example?
Yes, I can. One of the chapters is about a woman named Shahala. And she was assigned a reconstruction project in the middle of Fallujah when the war was going on, right? So she had to deal with the terrorists. She had to deal with Saddam Hussein was after him. She was a Kurd, so she had to keep out of the way of people who didn't like women. And then the American military was over there. And she pulled off the most amazing reconstruction projects you've ever seen without anybody realizing she was there. And she got a team of a lot of Iraqi people, and they knew that they just needed to quietly go about rebuilding. Like, there was a bunch of refugees that came in, they built straw bale houses for them.
Oh, wow.
They renovated gardens. Uh-huh. They got the glass factory going up because everybody had blown the you know. And that was all in 4 months.
And that's amazing.
And then it got so dangerous for her to be doing this that Saddam, likely he came after her. And when he found out that somebody was working against him or underneath him, mm-hmm. he would go after their families.
Oh.
So she came to the United States and I interviewed her at Tufts.
And she Tufts University?
At Tufts. She went and got a master's degree, but basically she had to get out of Dodge so mm-hmm. that her family could be safe.
That's amazing. Well, so these people are making peace, helping other people, and they're doing it quietly, but actively.
Yes, and mindfully. They're really thinking about how best to go about it.
Talk a little bit about Chido. She was the woman from Africa.
Zimbabwe. She's,
Zimbabwe. She's, what an amazing... an amazing story, and you write these stories so beautifully. It's so compelling. I mean, this book is a page turner.
Oh, thank you.
So I want you to know that. But she's amazing. Chido Govera. She's from Zimbabwe, and her metaphor. You have a metaphor that apparently is selected by each of these women. Her metaphor is, quote, "I am an eagle who rises above my troubles to do my work from an inspired view," end quote. Tell us about Chido.
So Chido was not able to be, she was like a mouse under somebody's foot rather than an eagle when all her story started. Her mom died, she never knew who her father was. Her mom died of AIDS when she was 7. And that left her not only in charge of providing for her 3-year-old brother and her blind grandmother, but it left her vulnerable to anything any Zimbabwean men, mm-hmm. or her uncles wanted to do to her. That's just the way it is when you're an unprotected orphan. Mm-hmm. So her childhood was such a struggle. She quit elementary school just to be able to find food. Then somebody nominated her for a mushroom workshop.
The mushrooms.
1 week teaching her how to do mushrooms. And not only did she came, that changed everything for Chido. Mm-hmm. She came home, she had a way to feed her family. She had a way to sell something mm-hmm. so she could send her little brother and other kids to school. And she also realized while she was there I don't need to put up with my uncles.
Ah, she was really empowered to take care of herself.
Yeah, and that's when she sort of became an eagle.
Okay.
She looked down at her situation and went like, ugh. Mm-hmm. And so she, to make a long story short, at 8 years old, she had a dream about having a center for other orphans.
And she actually had a dream. It wasn't just an aspiration. It was a nighttime dream.
It was a nighttime mm-hmm. dream. Didn't have much time to flourish given what was going on in her life. But the chapter describes all the pieces. I mean, if you want to believe in the universe, mm-hmm. Fulfilling somebody's dream, you think all
synchronicity and all of that, sure.
Yeah, all the players that came in place. And mm-hmm. I just did a Zoom meeting with Cheeto about mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago. She now has a center. The orphans are learning. She realized the orphans, if you send a valuable orphan home to her village, she gets married right away or they won't treat
right.
her. So she trains women from the village to pave the way for them. And she's got this amazing, she teaches them permaculture. And they have chickens now. And there is such a funny thing. Her chickens are called Roadrunners. Now, she's never seen the cartoons, right?
Right.
I said, why are they called Roadrunners? She said, because they are so big-breasted. We have to chase them down the road. So she's on it. She's 30-something now, and she is on it right now.
That's amazing. Do you have any favorites? Favorite mm-hmm. stories, maybe not favorite people, but the most compelling stories, because there are so many. I mean, there's Cheeto, there's Sister Sarah, there's Theo Colburn, the late, great Theo Colburn.
Yes.
From your neck of the woods. Do you have any more, do you feel like there are stories which are the most compelling?
Well, I don't, they're all so compelling that while I was getting this book ready during COVID, mm-hmm. I was uplifted. I mean, I could just pick up any of those stories. And I read the audiobook for this, and I would go home and I'd go like, I'm sorry, but I am not down in the dumps like everybody else here. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you one quick story about a woman. Her name is Yvonne DeMello. I was able to interview, this was somebody sent me an airplane magazine notice. I called her up. She said, sure, I'll interview with you. I'm actually coming to the United States for my daughter's graduation. So I got to interview the mother and the daughter. And what the mother does is she works with the favela children, the street children there.
Right, in Brazil. Mm-hmm.
In Brazil.
In Rio.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in Rio. And it's a very dangerous job. And you'll see that her daughter said, yeah, I had to learn how to duck and pray the minute I went with her. But Yvonne isn't afraid of all this. So she goes to the streets all the time. And she figured out that these kids don't even know the most basic things. They are the ones that drug dealers carry out their drugs. And if they blow a drug deal, they shoot them right mm-hmm. in her arms sometimes.
Oh.
And so it's really dangerous. And these kids feel like they are worthless. And she decided the very first thing she has to do is teach them that they exist. And I went like, what?
How? Teach them that they exist.
As I say in the book, how did I find out that I existed? Mm-hmm. So what she does with these little kids, and she told me this, I'll never forget the moment. She'll take one of them out in the street and hold their hand and put the arm up like this and go like, I am somebody.
Okay.
And then they go back and sit down. Hmm. And I said, does it stick? She said, yep, sometimes it sticks, because a little bit after she started doing this with them, the police came and raided these kids and put a plastic bag over one kid's head and beat him. And she got a call from the kids. She came down from her house. She took the witnesses and the kid to this police station. And she said, there are four laws that you've broken. And all of these kids are witnesses to it. And I'm going to report it. And the police chief said, oh, I'm really sorry. We won't do that again. Mm-hmm. And so I said to her afterwards, I said, so do you think that'll change things? She said, no. Mm-hmm. This is a community of 12,000. If there are 1,000 of these things that happen. But she said, I consider it a success. Because you can't realize that the rules have been violated against you unless you know that you exist.
Right. And that's a common theme through this, it seems. You know, and God, for lack of a better word, self-empowerment. I mean, that's such a, you know, kind of a heady word, but knowing that you exist, whether it's the orphans or the children that these people or the other people that these women work for, work with, or the women themselves, that's a huge thing with them, is following their heart, seriously following, you know, kind of elbowing their way into the world and saying, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing. And it seems to me that that is a huge piece of making peace.
You're right. You're right on about that, Amy. It's, there is one quote, I haven't quoted the women, there are a lot of quotes in the book, but they're from the that aren't the peacemakers, but there's one quote I did include, and it's from the Israeli psychiatrist. And it's a quiet set of words that all, everybody knows what all the words mean, but you could skip the meaning of it unless you listen really carefully to what she said. She said, it's all about mutual respect, because when there's mutual respect, people are willing to share power.
Oh.
And I thought, wow.
Whoa.
I mean, it's like, you know, we know all those words, but it's like, do I know an example of where power is shared now?
Exactly.
Maybe in a great marriage. But I mean, share, that's what brings peace. Mutual respect enough so that you
shared power. And this, I think what's great about this book, Barb, is that you help us understand what those words mean. I mean, we do use those a lot, shared power, mutual respect, self-empowerment. But I think what your book does, what you've been able to do, is really show us what that means.
Oh, great.
And you know, we only have a few minutes left, and there are a couple of things that I wanted to touch on here, is that this is not just, I mean, if I can say that, a book highlighting these fabulous women. It is also, you talk about some of the lessons that you've gleaned from these peacemakers, and then you invite readers to do something. Can you talk about that invitation briefly?
I do. There is, I just over time saw that there were about 24 things that kind of happened across the board with these women. And they are in chapter 17 of the book as bullets. And there are things like, be awake when the opportunity comes along. Like, never give up your goal and never get attached to how you get there. Like, when you are beleaguered with what you can't do, figure out one thing you can do and then do the next right thing. Or stay under the radar of the opposition. So that's that chapter. And then so very briefly, Amy, something happened to me in the middle of this 30 years. And I ended up being a counselor in a camp for Bosnian children in Croatia. Yeah. And when I saw what war did to those kids in their place, my whole focus for this book changed from curiosity to my goal right now is to wake up the peacemaker in his conscious peacemaker, in as many people as I can. And that chapter 18 invites the reader to do an act of peacemaking and then write it up and email it back to my website.
Oh, fabulous. And your website is?
It's all one word, Barb Chambliss Media, barbchamblissauthor.com.
And that's B-A-R-B-E.
Yeah.
C-H-A-M-B-L-I-S-S author.com.
You got it.
You know, we have just like 2 minutes, a minute and a half left, and I could talk to you about this all day. Maybe we should do that. How did you find a publisher? I mean, that's a hard thing to sell, is a book, even though this is a fabulous book, it's sort of a hard concept to sell. How did you find a publisher, and who was it?
It was local. It's so amazing. The universe just one day helped me find Light of the Moon Publishing. It's three women in Carbondale, and they are so knowledgeable about what they do. And the fact, for instance, that this book has all the photos on the front, but the beginning of each chapter has drawings.
Oh, the illustrations are
that
beautiful.
Was Elisa Onmak's idea. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the packaging of this book and the leadership they do, they partner with you. Mm-hmm. You retain ownership, but they have been my angels. I'm
excellent.
Telling you.
Light That's of the excellent. Moon. Light yeah. of the Moon. It's in Carbondale. It's Elisa Onmak's company. Yeah.
Exactly right. They're a block away from you.
Barb Chambliss, author.com. Barb Chambliss, friend and author. This is I just congratulate you on this achievement. And, you know, I guess we'll have to have you on the show again to talk about what's next. I mean, I'm sure you feel sort of like an empty nester after all these decades of working on it, but we're going to have to leave it there.
Yep.
And Amy Goodman would say, thanks very much. Congratulations on the book. I can't wait to finish it. Thanks very
Thank
much
you
for joining
so
me.
Much for the interview.
Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.